You're listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Heartland Politics show and podcast, which is aired on and distributed by WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR. WVIK is the flagship public radio station in the Quad Cities region of northwestern Illinois and eastern Iowa. I'm your host, Robin Johnson, and today I'm very pleased to have as my guest a person who is no stranger to the Quad Cities region. He's a former state senator in Illinois. He's a former member of the United States House of Representatives. He's a candidate for governor and former president of Southern Illinois University, and he's told his life story in a recent book, which is very interesting. Great holiday gift here. It's called Son of Southern Illinois, Glenn Pichard's Life in Politics and Education, and I'm very pleased to have Glenn as my guest today. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Robin, for having me. I appreciate it very much.
Well, it's interesting. Downstate Illinois, that term has kind of a mystique to it. I've been down there, of course. Very beautiful, very fascinating. But you talk about how when you grew up, that the Southern Illinois values that were instilled in you and carried you through your life. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, you know, when I ran for governor, Robin, I found out over in Winnebago County that people over there were known by folks from Chicago as downstaters, too. Never understood that.
Yeah.
This end of the state, as you know, probably this third of the state, the southernmost 36 counties, all settled by folks from Virginia, Carolinas, Kentucky, and so on. So a lot of cultural, social values down here were inherited from the South, basically. And it's very different from the rest of the state in that sense. But in growing up here, the values that were instilled in me by my family, I think work ethic would have to be one of the top values. Everybody was poor in the hill country where I grew up, so they had to work all the time. And so work ethic was certainly a big focus for us. Faith was important because the church was not only the center of the individual spiritual being, it was the center of the spiritual being of the community. And so the church was foremost in our upbringing. I'd say education. My mom and dad only had a third grade education, but their focus on getting their kids educated was everything. And that was true of all the families around where I grew up. And then I think we inherited something also that was patriotic. You know, you paid your dues to the country. You went into the military or whatever other area to serve, but that was important. So I think those were the kinds of family values that were installed in us growing up.
I thought it was interesting you mentioned in the book that the education and military were two ways for folks growing up there to build careers. And you went into the service, and I thought it was interesting. You told a story about something happened in Korea during your service that deeply impacted your life.
Yes, you know, there were very few jobs where I grew up, very poor country down here, not like the black loam of central Illinois. It's red clay. You can't grow much on it. There were no jobs available, so the service was an outlet for young men graduating high school. And I'll tell you, I got to see half the world in the service. I got a roof over my head, three meals a day. The Army gave me back. It was more than I gave it. But I was stationed in Korea up on the DMZ with the 1st Cav Division. There was an orphanage right down the main supply route from our outfit. And some friends and I would go down when we had some spare time and work in that orphanage. And they were kids from, you know, left after the war, homeless. And it really impacted my heart in a way that I never gave up on it. And that's affected a lot of my life today in this latter stage of my life. That was important, of course, working in that orphanage and understanding maybe what Hubert Humphrey had to say to us. And, you know, if you remember his phrase, Robin, he said, the true test of a moral, ethical society is how we treat those in the dawn of their lives, our children, those in the dusk of their lives, our elderly, and those in the shadows of life, our disabled, our disenfranchised. I saw that for the first time. Where I grew up, it was poverty, but we didn't starve. We had plenty to eat. We had clothes on our back. First time I actually witnessed starvation in children, and it affected me in a very deep way. The other thing, when I came home, I started at SIU, Southern Illinois University, blue collar community. Blue collar university has educated hundreds of thousands of young people that came out of families just like mine. And I'm very grateful for that. So yes, those two things, the military and education, were a big part of my life, as they were of all the young people growing up down here.
And then, of course, you got into education, teaching, some coaching. And what led you first to kind of get a bug for political office? I think it's interesting how people first kind of get engaged in the political process.
Well, it was interesting for me because my father only had one arm. He got his arm shot off in a hunting accident when he was 13 years old. So he and my mother went to work on WPA under the Franklin Roosevelt administration. Dad was a water boy on some road crews that they were building roads through this old forest they'd bought up down here, Shawnee National Forest. And Dad was a water boy on those road crews because that's all he could do was haul water with his one arm. Made 85 cents an hour. My mother, they built a nursing home in Carmi, Illinois, and they'd come out in the hills and pick up the women in the vans and haul them in. And my mother scrubbed floors on her hands and knees all day in that nursing home. Together, that's how they raised five kids. So they were consummate Franklin Roosevelt, dyed-in-the-wool Democrats. I heard it around my dinner table every night, Robin, you know, and I grew up. But the person that really inspired me was my father, because he was a precinct committeeman. He would go through the hills and help people get registered to vote and take them to the polls and all kinds of things. And I would sit up at the polls with him every election, watching the judges count those paper ballots, you know. And but the person that inspired me and I think my whole generation was John Kennedy. You know, he just made us feel like, you're citizens of today. You don't have to wait till tomorrow, you know. And I listened to his speeches. I memorized all of his speeches. When I was walking guard duty on the hills in Korea, freezing at night, I'd be saying John Kennedy's speeches to myself. But those two people, my dad and Kennedy, that's why I went into politics.
You know, I really love reading about campaigns back in those days, not too far back, but back far enough in my life too that I can remember. Now a Senate race, state Senate race, will cost millions of dollars and all TV. But describe how you campaigned back then when you ran for the state Senate.
Oh man, well, you know, it was backyard barbecues and chicken dinners. There was nobody giving you $10,000, $20,000, $50,000. You were raising the money, you know, $10, $25 at a clip. You're covering all of these counties. You had to really get out and meet the people. And it was a constant thing. Every parade, every community gathering, you had to be there and you worked and you got your campaign people with you. But it was not a high dollar campaign at any point in my life. Robert, I think you probably know that, I came to a point in my life when I went to Congress that really affected me deeply. Before you run for Congress, you'll spend a year or 2 years going out to Washington, D.C., and they set you up with all these PAC organizations, and you got an interview with those PACs, those political action committees. If they like what you say, they're going to put their support behind you, give you money, put their people on the street for you. If they don't, you don't get it. You know, so you pretty much know right then whether you're going to get endorsed by these powerful PACs and their money. That didn't sit well with me. I just hated that because I felt like I was committing myself to something that I didn't know a whole lot about yet. And when I got to Congress and saw that the issues were more national than parochial in your own district, you know, I had already tied my hands by agreeing that I would support this legislation. And I went, prostituted myself. And I went back to the office one day and I pulled all the people in on my staff and I said, I'm not doing this again. I'm not taking another penny of PAC monies. I'm not signing any agreements that I'll support this legislation until I hear all the facts. I'm not going to. And of course, you know, that hurt me when I ran for governor. I handled it well when I was in Congress. But when I ran for governor and the need for money was so overwhelming, I took a lot of criticism for not taking the money. George Ryan outspent me $17 million to $4 million in my race for governor after I'd won the Democrat primary. And I took a lot of hits on that. But Robin, I'm telling you, when you look at the system today, that's what people do all the time, is just constantly raise money for political campaigns. I can't do it. I could not do it. And the thing of it is, I won't say that it affects the way a person will vote if somebody gives you $25,000, $50,000, $100,000 in a PAC or something, but it sure buys access. Paul Simon used to say, if some guy gives me $10,000 and some guy gives me $10, whose call do you think I'm going to return? You know? And,
right.
And I don't like that. I just can't go along with it. I couldn't go along with it. So
you're listening to Heartland Politics on WVIK Quad Cities NPR. I'm your host, Robin Johnson, and I'm very delighted to have as my guest today, Glenn Pichard. You'll know that name. He's been in the Quad City region plenty of times over his career. He's a former state senator from down in Southern Illinois, member of the United States House of Representatives, candidate for governor. He's written a book that I recommend you read. It's I really enjoyed it. It once you get into it, it's a quick read, because if you like politics, as we were just talking about, the old style of campaigning, boy, I yearn for those days. Here's what the book's called. Son of Southern Illinois, Glenn Pichard's Life in Politics and Education. I want to get into this more, Glenn, because we talked a little on our discussion on the phone when we arranged this interview about the role of money. I think, and I'll just share with my listeners, you ran a principled campaign. Whether people disagreed with you or voted against you, nobody could question whether you weren't a man of principle. And this carried with some other issues, not just the PAC issue, but your position on guns and abortion deviated from kind of where the Democratic Party is today. Can you talk about a little bit about that, the pressures on you and what role it had in that outcome in the governor's race?
Yeah, Robin, I think before you get into politics, you know, you really got to look at your philosophy of life. You know, what do you believe in deeply when it comes to, you know, the issues like power and compromise and criticism and risk taking and, you know, all of these kinds of things? If you don't figure that out before politics, you're in trouble. And so I had to, based upon my upbringing, based upon my family, based upon my faith, I had some issues that differed greatly from mainstream Democrat policy, and I couldn't help but take the issues you just brought up, guns and abortion. When I was in Congress, I voted once for the assault weapons ban, because I really do believe we don't need those kinds of weapons in everybody's hands that wants to have them. It almost cost me an election. I think I lost 20 some odd points in the election after that. And people were violently opposed to my vote on that issue. So, but it was an issue that I felt like I could compromise on. It was part of the crime bill. And I wanted to vote for that crime bill because it had many things in it that I thought we needed. But so I was able to compromise on that issue. And when I ran for governor, that was a big issue in Chicago. And I was able to go with Congressman Danny Davis and some others and look at the carnage that those assault weapons were bringing in the streets of Chicago. And I said, I'm not going to support just all-encompassing measures that allow people to have anything they want in the way of guns. Abortion was a different issue for me because, first of all, it was part of my family. It was part of my faith. It's what I grew up believing in my church, in my community. And it was not something that I could say, okay, I'll change. I couldn't. It was not in my conscience to change on that issue. Now, Robin, don't get me wrong. I'm not against women choosing what they want to choose, and the law gave them that right under Roe versus Wade, which, by the way, was passed by a 7-2 decision of the Supreme Court. Five of the seven judges that voted for it were Republican. So, you know, but it was something that I grappled with mightily in my conscience and my spirit. And I couldn't find it a way around my family's teachings or my church's teachings. And so it cost me a lot. Everywhere I went, particularly in Chicago, groups of people would come and protest my being there and interrupt my speeches and all kinds of things. And I understood it. I wasn't against those folks believing what they believed and having the right to have an abortion under the law. But it was a personal thing for me, a personal thing. And the thing of it is, in my election for governor, it became a litmus test for being a Democrat. If you didn't believe in pro-choice, you couldn't be a Democrat, you know. And so groups like the Illinois Education Association, National Organization of Women, and others, groups that I'd had a 90% or better voting record with, and George Ryan was down in the 17 or 18%, they endorsed him over that one issue, And so there was nothing I could do about it. Just one of those things. That issue did cost me the election. I have no doubt about that, because large numbers of people in the Democrat Party turned against me over that issue.
You see, Glenn, the issues, the problems that the Democratic Party has right now with working class voters. And Southern Illinois, I think, is typical of this. I'm old enough to remember when a lot of counties in Southern Illinois voted Democratic, elected Democratic state legislators, you as a member of Congress. Yes. Now you look down there on the presidential map and they're voting 70% for the Republican candidate. And this was before Trump, Mitt Romney. Have the Democrats kind of abandoned rural and working class voters for some of these reasons we've just touched on, litmus tests?
Yeah, I don't think they have abandoned them, but I think the Democrat Party has become very urban centric and depends mainly on the vote coming out of the big cities for their statewide help. That leaves folks down in an area where I am feeling like, wait a minute, don't we count anymore? Because, you know, we're surrounded by Kentucky, Missouri, and Indiana here, and all of those broadcast stations over there in Cape Girardeau, Paducah, Evansville, Indiana, their broadcast politics is all Republican. And so our people have to fight all kinds of battles that you don't see when you're in the city and so on. So it's become an urban-centric party, but you shouldn't desert us, because as a state central committee person, as I told our state central committee on different occasions, Robin, we lost a considerable amount of the Hispanic vote this time that did not vote for Kamala Harris. We also lost a considerable amount of young Black men voting for Donald Trump. If that urban area begins to lose Democrat support, and you don't, and you've neglected downstate rural areas, you know, eventually there's going to come a tipping point where a blue state like Illinois may very well become a red state. I think the Democrats carried Illinois like 53 to 47% this last time, which isn't overwhelming numbers. But the party needs to focus in the rural areas also, because we have many issues in the rural areas that matter. Education, you know, connectivity with the internet is lacking in many, many areas in downstate. We have health issues that you don't have in the big cities. Many of our rural hospitals have closed because they have a high percentage of Medicare, Medicaid patients. You know, our areas are more elderly, poorer, and so on. So they need to focus on these kinds of things to help us and not make it like, well, we're just a one area party. Now, let me tell you, I'm just thinking when you called me, Robin, four of the greatest congresspeople with whom I have ever served were from essentially your area. Sherry Bustos, great congressperson. Lane Evans, great congressperson. And when you get over into more central Illinois and Peoria and that area, Bob Michael and Ray LaHood, two great congressmen. You know, so you've got the stuff in both parties in downstate areas, because central Illinois is as downstate as we are, although it's a little different in culture and so on. But we've had great representation in these areas. You got a young woman, Nikki Budzinski, that represents part of Central Illinois now. You know, people like that, Sorensen. We've got good people on both sides that can get this right. But the Democrat Party can't just focus on the urban centers and feel like that's where they'll always win the election.
Well, I think the Democrats have a lot of work to do there in rural areas, and I think what's interesting too, in your background, Glenn, is while you were a member of Congress, you helped form a Faith in Politics Institute, which I thought was interesting. Again, faith is something the Democrats don't seem very comfortable with.
Yeah.
What led you to create that?
I don't know why. I created it because in the night that they had the freshman orientation, we had a dinner over in Statuary Hall, and I was sitting at the table with a young man who was a Methodist minister, and his wife was worked in the Senate there, and we got to talking about our love of visiting monasteries and things like that, and I had always thought the contemplative life would be something that I would really be interested in. And so we started getting together on a Wednesday morning in my office at about 6:30. And we just started investigating this thing. The Bible says we are given to Caesar what is Caesar's and given to the Lord what is the Lord. And we just took that. And we said, well, there's not too many places that represent Caesar better than Washington, D.C. It's the seat of power and influence in the whole world. Okay, so how are we, as members of the Christian faith, supposed to serve the Lord and serve Caesar at the same time? What does that mean to us? And we started just praying about that and talking about that. And then other people came into those meetings and they got very large. And then Doug broke off and started forming other meetings on the hills. And we decided, well, we need to make this a formal organization. And we did. We formed Faith and Politics. Okay. It's up there on the hill. It's one of the great groups that bring both Democrats and Republicans together and talking about that very issue. You know, of how are we to be true to our faith and true to our politics at the same time. It's a great organization. John Lewis was a member of our organization. It was probably equally divided between Republicans and Democrats.
Does it still meet? Do they still have that?
Oh, yeah.
To bring people together?
Oh, gosh, yeah. We started those trips down to Selma, Alabama. John Lewis took the whole group down there, and Ray LaHood was prominent in that group, and Ray helped take some people like to an area up at Hershey, Pennsylvania, and had big meetings up there with this group and so on. It's an effort still to try to find the middle ground, not to hate each other. You know, I've had hundreds and hundreds of wonderful Republican friends. You know, I always taught my kids when I taught government. Over here, you have the laissez-faire, hands-off a kind of government, you know, where people do whatever they want to do, ever how they want to do it, and hands-off. Over here, you've got the autocratic, you know, where one guy sits at the top with the army behind him, and he's everything. But in the middle here is democracy. This is where America dwells. Sometimes we'll go a little bit to the left of the center. Sometimes we'll go a little bit to the right. But we don't dwell on the extremes. And that's what the Faith and Politics Institute tried to do. We'll say, come on, let's find the middle ground here. And that's what they're still trying to do in bringing people together in Washington, D.C.
Glenn, I just have 1 minute left. I'd like you to, my final question is just for you to talk briefly about the Prichard Foundation for Abused Children. That's in the book as well.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Robin. Based upon my experience in Korea and over the years working with poor kids in this end of the state, my wife and I, after I lost the election for governor, said, what's our next step? Our next step was to form a foundation to help abused, neglected, and abandoned children in this end of the state, about 36 counties. We support thousands of young children who have gone through this traumatic part of their lives. Unfortunately, drugs in our culture has had a big reason for that. We take care of them. We don't take federal help, state help. We're all volunteers. Johnny Logan Community College gives us space and computers, and every penny we raise goes directly to the children, and we have raised millions of dollars over the last 25 years to take care of these kids.
It's really great. Is there a website they could go to if people want to learn more about it?
Just PichardFoundation.com. That's all they need to know. Yeah.
Okay. Well, folks, Glenn, we didn't get to talk much about your experience as SIU president, but I wanted to talk more about the political angle because that's the focus of our show. But again, I would recommend the listeners this book, Son of Southern Illinois, Glenn Prichard's Life in Politics and Education. Glenn wrote this with Carl Walworth, I will say, and be a great stocking stuffer if you're still looking for ideas. Glenn, thank you so much for being a guest today on Heartland Politics.
Thank you, Robin, for having me.
You've been listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR. You can follow Heartland Politics at WVIK.org or wherever you subscribe to podcasts.